Welcome to the acclaimed podcast, Deep Dive with Andy and the White Whale.
And welcome to the Deep Dive. Today is Wednesday of championship weekend in the NFL. We are here to handicap two interesting matchups in the AFC. We are looking at Patriots hosting the Jaguars. Patriots amazingly hosting their seventh AFC championship game. Meanwhile, all three other quarterbacks this weekend who are playing are at the pinnacle of their careers in terms of never having reached this level before. So there's a lot of uncertainty heading into this weekend. And to help us through all of this, we brought back one of our favorite guests, friend of the pod, Woody Wins. So today I'm joined with joined by Andy and Woody. Andy, how you doing this beautiful Wednesday afternoon?
Good. It's gonna be. I mean, I'm out here in the savage winter of the Minnesota winter, and I've got one person calling me from old California and one calling me from new California, which is kind of exciting. So I don't know if there's gonna be like a rivalry there or what, but yeah.
Yeah, Woody's part of the California that's going to break off into the new California. Did you hear that news yesterday?
No, I thought you were. LA's new California.
Oh, no.
You're in New California.
The coast is just going to be California. New California.
Oh, is that how it goes?
Yeah.
I didn't look that close at the map. They should do it just on the fault line.
Well, it's not that far off, actually, to be honest. It's good to be joined again by our friend, our California friend, up from the northern part of the state, where they take care of our herbal needs in the growing community up there. And welcome again to the Deep Dive, Woody. Thanks for joining us. And how are you doing this January? Has it been an exciting year? 2018 year of legal weed in California.
Yeah, it's been pretty exciting, and thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate the opportunity to come and chat a little football with you. But we up here in the higher part of California are preparing for all these regulations that are coming in, and we're cautiously optimistic and looking forward to an exciting year. End of prohibition is officially upon us. So good job, California voters. You got it right.
I love it.
You're already sounding like a marketer. I like it.
You got a bright future in this industry, Woody.
Certainly hope so. It's a little hazy at the moment, but we're hoping to get some light shined in the right direction.
I love it. Well, it's a light week. We only get two games. So before we dive into those, it'd be good to kind of bend your ear a little bit on what you think about the current state of the NBA. I still maintain that, like, I think you and I are the only people who are, like, consistently handicapping NBA on Twitter. And maybe there's lots of other people, and I'm just an idiot and I'm not paying attention. But I always look out for your card. I love seeing what plays you're on. Whenever we're kind of in line, I always feel better about my action. What do you think about the current state of the NBA? Here we sit now, halfway through the season.
Well, I certainly enjoy it when our cards align, but I haven't done too well when we've been oppo on a bunch of plays. You seem to have taken it to me a fair bit, so maybe I need to bend your ear a little bit more before placing the wagers. But the season started off real hot for me. I mean, I'm a big unders and underdog better, so the first half of the season was just unders galore, going crazy, and it's definitely leveled out a fair bit. So it's we're getting a little regression back towards that, but that's all right. I'm still up a little bit for the year, so I'm hanging on to it and trying to be a little more selective. There's a couple really exciting teams that I think could make a little noise. Like we mentioned a little bit off the pod, Toronto, pretty well balanced team. The T-Wolves doing much better than I had anticipated coming into the year. I mean, I think everybody thought they'd do well, but seeing them, I've got them power rated fifth right now. So they've exceeded my expectations. And if the Spurs can ever get Kawhi up and running,
Yeah, that was bad news too.
Their metrics are almost as good as the Warriors without him. So insert Kawhi back into the lineup, and who knows? Maybe the West can have a little drama.
It's certainly hopeful on my end. Andy, do you think the T-Wolves can get the third seed in the West?
Ooh, they'd have to stay pretty hot. Where are they sitting right now? I guess I haven't checked the NBA standings in 2 days. I know on top of the division, but that doesn't mean all.
No, they completely revised the way that they have it all set up. But they're only one loss. Yeah, they're one loss back of San Antonio right now. And right now,
this Kawhi injury. Yeah. Boy, if the Spurs take a hard digger here and end up going, you know, they're 5-5 their last 10 as it is. If they continue down that path and only win 50-60% of the games from here on out, the Wolves can definitely slide into that 3 spot, get on the other side of the bracket from the Dubs, and maybe end up winning a couple series. I was saying this to Woody too. I think the last time I saw a Timberwolves playoff game, Sam Cassell and Latrell Sprewell were on the squad. So it'll be exciting just to see them playing some playoff basketball. Honestly, it's been a while. We rebuilt for a decade.
So interestingly, it looks like, and I don't know how the seeding works really nowadays, but for whatever reason, it's got Portland slotted fifth if the playoffs started today, even though they're 22-21. Is that because they win the Mountain or whatever the stupid designation of division that they're in is? And they would be the fifth seed, and you'd get that'd be an interesting shakeout. Personally, if you're just looking at the top four, and I really only think we need to consider the top four contenders. I don't think Portland, I don't think Oklahoma City, I don't think New Orleans, I don't think the Clippers really are going to be able to win a playoff series. But if we're looking at the top four, and you have Golden State, San Antonio, I like that as a semifinal in the West. That'd be pretty sweet. And then Houston, Minnesota intrigues me more than if you flip those around. Like, I don't want to see Golden State, Minnesota, and I don't want to see Houston, San Antonio. We saw Houston, San Antonio matched up last year. I don't think enough of the parts have changed really to kind of make that a more interesting series. And so it'd be more fun if you had a healthy Kawhi for a 7-game series against the Warriors in the semifinals, and then we really got to see the two best teams in the West and presumably Golden State and Houston or Golden State and Minnesota face off for the Western Conference Championship. That'd be exciting. I'm with you in that I have Minnesota rated like crazy high. In fact, like this time of season, for whatever reason, like I kind of have to change my weighting of how I'm looking at metrics a little bit in the NBA. Okay. You can't really use season-long metrics right now because so much of the beginning part of the season, like teams were figuring things out. You had either full health squads or they were playing four full quarters of effort. Now the metrics are a little bit tilted by, you know, just the current state of the teams that are kind of out of the race, you know, really aren't giving you much of an honest effort late if it's a close game, or vice versa. If it's totally out of the water, sometimes these bottom feeders can kind of make a run late in the game and cover, you know, backdoor covers like we saw with Phoenix last night. That was huge. But I do like a little bit of a heavier weighting to like last five, you know, and just like kind of try to capture a little bit of the heat index. And sure, believe it or not, for like the first time NBA all jam season, yeah, there was like a couple weeks in December where Houston was my number one team, you know, via heat index, but it didn't last very long. Surprisingly, right now, over Golden State, even Minnesota is the number one team. If you just look over their last five games, they're performing incredibly well, both offensive and defensively. This was, again, of course, before they put up that stinker yesterday in Orlando. Go figure. You know, you come in as the hottest team in the league and you drop one to the Magic.
They can't win them all.
Kicking myself for not taking that. I know.
4 points
in that one. And I was too. They're beat up. They're not going to cut. And then sure enough, they went out.
I know. I caught an under on that, thankfully. Otherwise, I would have been doing the exact same thing. But yeah, you got any interesting I don't know, any interest in some of these matchups tonight? I grabbed Chicago as an interesting spot here against the Golden State Warriors. We saw the Warriors on Martin Luther King Day against the Cavs. That game was intense. We had I had the Dubs in that game to cover, and they came on like a freight train in the second half and brought that 7.5 home for me. I'm going against them tonight. I'm back in Chicago. I kind of like the Bulls. The Bulls are a frisky little team. Almost everyone looks past them just because of the talent on the roster, and sure enough, they are just covered champions going on the last month and a half here.
Well, they had that slow start, but since then, they've looked really good.
They have, and this is the kind of spot I really think.
If they wouldn't have had that first month, boy, you'd be talking about slipping into the 8th seed. And actually, they're not even that far out. I mean, they're only 6 games out of the playoffs right now.
Yeah, no, they're that Jimmy Butler trade isn't looking too bad for them.
No, that seemed like one of the worst trades. Yeah, that seemed like one of the worst trades of the offseason. It's kind of coming around now to where it wasn't actually so terrible. So, yeah, I back the Bulls tonight, +8. We'll see how that goes down in flames in the fourth quarter or whatever, because, you know, it's – I don't know. We're at the time of the season where it feels like every bet is pretty much determined in the fourth quarter. You know, either the team's kind of – you know, one team kind of completely puts it together and puts the other team away because they just identify their mismatches and just put their foot on the gas. You know, sometimes I've been losing some of these unders with just like 70, 80 point fourth quarters. It's just unbelievable. Brutal. Like, what the hell? Like, the game's totally out of hand, and it's like 20 points, you know, 20 point difference in the score, and these teams are just firing up threes and they're all going in. Everybody's
had this last night with Phoenix and Portland. I think there was a 67 point first quarter and then two sub 50 point quarters in the middle of the game, and then just Portland's up 20-30 points and just lets Phoenix right back into the game, giving up over 40 to Phoenix in the fourth. And I was just like, but then it had no chance.
Oh, brutal. Well, the first thing I got in play tonight in the NBA is looking pretty good. This Hornets Wizards game, we got, it looks like, almost 70 points in the first quarter so far. So the I think I got over 215 or over 216 in that. I'm going to be pretty excited if that one keeps running. Although the Wizards are a sneaky fourth quarter stinker team. I don't know what's up with that team, but when the crunch time rolls around for the Wizards, they just absolutely, you know, lay an egg. I've blown some good looking spreads and some good looking totals with them. Well,
Charlotte's sneaky good in the metrics. If you keep an eye on them, I mean, I've got them. Where do I have them?
Top half. Right.
Yeah, they're in the top half. Just below the top half. I got them 16, so they can sneak in there, and their starters can put up some points. They're a little weak off the bench, but if Kemba's cooking, man, he can run with the best of them.
Yeah, yeah, his shot kind of makes or breaks when they cover and when they go over. He's you know what? Actually, I'm going to give the folks at home a little nugget. This is the time of year, starting this week and next week, and I don't know the exacts on this, and so I apologize. But this week and next week,
there's
one of the angles
without the exacts.
Yes, without the exacts, but. I promise you, you will win or lose a bet based on this angle. This time of year, right?
Winner or a loser on this?
Yes, you will lose a bet if you don't catch this, or you will win one specifically because of this. This time of year, as we get close to them announcing the All Star rosters, certain players who are on the bubble for that absolutely go bananas. Like, they just go fucking nuts, and it's like there's roster bonuses, there's money at stake for some of these players making an all-star team. There are like triggers in terms of how many years you can get a max and how much your max be and all that stuff that plays into all NBA and all-star games. And so there are players, and I remember winning bets, thank you to Kemba Walker last year specifically, and Giannis last year. I remember he had a couple games in a row where he showed out. Jimmy Butler, same thing. Like, these guys needed to make the all-star starters or the all-star team in general, and they just went absolutely bananas in the little time window right before the starters were announced and the rosters were announced. So, you know, the guys who are kind of middle tier stars who aren't shoe-ins for the All-Star game, keep an eye on them this week, next week. They're going to make the difference in some of these games because they're going to be giving you 100% effort for a full, you know, 40 minutes that they play in a 48-minute game. So,
yeah,
that's a little old school nugget to keep an eye on. Any situational spots that you think really come into play this time of year, Woody?
Yeah, the rest is a big, big, big piece of my handicapping. I've got a couple sheets I've set up just tracking 3 and 4s, 5 and 7s, anything where you're getting a couple of long road trips, the end of a road trip, anything where you're getting one team on significantly less rest than the other. There's going to be some value. Now, you still have to have your baseline line to compare it to. So keep your power line and then keep your adjustments for 3 and 4, 5 and 7, and even 7 and 9. I think there's a couple, I think probably a couple 6 and 9s this year. But there's definitely some opportunities to fade the good teams off little to no rest versus a well-rested underdog, say, or Atlanta's. Or Utah even sneaks in there every now and again. I mean, there's definitely some good disciplined teams that you can find some advantage against the upper tier teams that are looking past them and are just gassed from a long road trip, or like I said, a back to back or 3 and 4. So the situational handicapping is a big, big part of my process.
That's awesome, man. I love that nugget. Do you kind of do your NBA like you would do NFL, where you sort of look at the whole week schedule on like a Monday or something and just kind of see how it all stacks up for certain teams throughout the week?
More or less. I've set up some heat maps that I have some triggers on, and really I'm just going off of how much red I'm seeing on my spreadsheet on any given day. So I don't
that makes sense.
Do it all at the beginning of the week. I set this up at the beginning of the season, so I've got it all set up in Excel. Just if I see a lot of red and it's on a team like, say, Cleveland or the Warriors or Boston or somebody like that, I'm almost auto fading them every single time.
Dude, I like that. That is a great idea. Good nuggets here for you folks if you're just getting into handicapping the NBA. You know, as the season wears on and once the NFL is over, we're absolutely going to try to bring Woody back and help us get perspective on the NBA playoffs when it comes time. And
he also has a, what was it, a 50-unit lock of the century on the All-Star game?
Yeah, that sounds like something I would do.
You like dogs and unders. How often do you bet the under in the All-Star game? Ooh, how many units on the under in the All-Star game?
You got to bet the over when it opens before it moves 13 points.
Well, what do you think the over-under is going to be? Somewhere in the 300 range?
Yeah, 380 probably.
Yeah.
It'll be close to 400.
360,
yeah,
380.
I will be mad at myself if it's even on my TV during the next week, whenever it is. I don't even know.
It's like a dunk contest with more people on the floor at the same time.
quick degenerate
story. There's no defense.
Quick degen story for you guys. I had like kind of worked up this whole angle in my head a couple years ago for the All-Star game. Like, you know what? Like, these guys, like, they try in, like, the last 6 minutes of the fourth quarter, like, they stop screwing around. And, like, if the game's pretty close, like, somebody will be like, look, I want to be the MVP. I'm going to start playing defense. I'm going to, like, try to make the difference in this game so I win the MVP award. And And so I was like watching live, and sure enough, like the total open 300 people betted up to 320 or whatever. And then like, you know, there's, you know, 100 points scored in the first quarter, and it's like, holy shit, this thing's on pace for 400. And the live total started climbing, and I was like, okay, I'm going to wait until about halfway through the fourth and just drop a nugget on the under live. And I can't even remember what the number was, but it was like, we'll say it was like 381, and I got under it was 381, 380 and a half or something like that, and I got under it. And then, like, game's completely over. Steph Curry's dribbling out the clock at half court and heaves a three, and it goes in, and the total lands at like 383. And I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Of course it
does. You got to be
kidding me. That's why you don't bet on that.
Yeah, that's why the All-Star game is a fool's bet. But thankfully, we'll have some tennis this year to bet on. I can't remember if the Olympics will coincide with the All-Star game this year, but we're not gonna be feeling the All-Star break blues from a handicapping standpoint. We're gonna find some fun stuff to bet on, and you guys will be a part of it if you are listening to the Deep Dive. So, and by the way,
are you adding the slam dunk contest to the Tournament of Champions?
That's a great idea. Let's definitely do that. Absolutely, slam dunk. Champion.
Major announcement.
Major announcement. This is huge. If you're part of the Tournament of Champions, look out for an opportunity to pick the slam dunk champion. I'm going to add that to the spreadsheet tonight. If you're not part of the Tournament of Champions, it's not too late to sign up. I mean, you missed Bama, Georgia game. You missed your opportunity to pick a winner in the Australian Open. But there's still like 30 more champions to be crowned this year, so it's not too late to get involved and to try to win some free Bitcoin. Bitcoin's taking a beating today, but by the time it rolls around to awarding that prize to the winner, I think we're going to be talking about Bitcoin tickling six figures. So I got my fingers
crossed. A whole
crossed.
Bitcoin you're giving out, Whale?
50th.
It's actually Bitcoin. it's a 20 mil of Bitcoin goes to the winner. So at the time we started the contest, it was about $300. Hopefully by the time the contest closes, it's closer to $3,000, but we'll see.
I'm on a one to start, so I'm running away with it.
Oh, dude. Yeah, Woody's tied for the lead right now. Get yourself involved if you're not already. It's going to be a ton of fun because there's a lot of fun stuff going on this year. All right, with that, let's get to what the people want to hear. We want to break down these NFL championship games. Boy, this is exciting but somber. I mean, we got some great teams. We got the teams we wanted here for the most part. And we got some interesting handicapping angles to get to, but at the same time, we got no Saturday games this week, two Sunday games, and then we got to wait 2 weeks for the Super Bowl. So you can really feel, you know, the end of the season is hanging over our heads right now. I like betting the NFC and AFC title games. It's a fun Sunday. It's they got them staggered, obviously, so that they do the full award ceremony before the second game starts. So you can kind of, you can really give it some time to get your action in if you're the kind of person that likes to wait till the last minute. This week, the AFC title game starts first. We see Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, and company heading to their seventh in a row, which is flatly amazing. This is their 7th home AFC title game, which is also flatly amazing. They're hosting the surprise Jaguars. The Shaguars. Blake Bortles and the Shaguars. Amazing that they made it to the AFC title game in a year where I bet you at the beginning of the season, their odds to win the AFC were in the 100 or 200 to 1 range.
100 to 1, yeah.
100 to 1. I love that. Oh, man. I obviously have a Patriots homer angle, so I'm not going to start kind of breaking this game down because I'd like to hear what you two have to say about this. Woody, do you see an angle here on the side that you're particularly into?
You got to give me the Jaguars here. My numbers have to be. as a 9-point underdog favorite. So I'm a little exposed on this side. Let's say that. I've got the Jaguars in a tease. I've got the Jaguars straight up. I've got a 25-1 future on the Jaguars to win the Super Bowl. Give me the Jags here. This is the perfect spot for the Jags. 9 points is way, way, way too many. When I was kicking around the number last week before looking at any of the look-aheads, which I didn't end up getting an eyeball on, but I was thinking to myself, what would the number be if the Jaguars get past the Steelers going up against who I assumed would be the Patriots? And I was the first number that came to my head was, Patriots minus 4.5. And I was like, it's too low. Patriots minus 6. I was like, I could see a Patriots minus 6 if assuming the Jaguars get past the Steelers. Obviously, the Jaguars would have had to put on a heck of a show to defeat the Steelers, which nobody gave them a chance to do in the first place. So you're going to get some public perception that the Jaguars are pretty good, and then lo and behold, the number comes out 9. And I could not get to the book fast enough to bet that thing. I mean, it was a no-brainer to me. I didn't even have to look at my numbers, and sure enough, when I actually plugged them in, Jaguars minus 1.8 is my line. So the Jaguars defense is number one going up against this Patriots offense, ranked, 5.9 yards per play for the Pats offense, and Jaguars are only allowing 4.5 yards per play on defense. We've got strength against strength and weakness against weakness. We've got the Jaguars pass defense ranked, what do we have it at here? Pass defense number one versus number one ranked pass offense, strength versus strength. We've got the number one worst rush defense in the Patriots going up against the Jaguars, 13th in adjusted line yards? And run offense 12th. So the Jaguars should be able to take it to the Patriots on the ground. The Jaguars should be able to stop the Patriots through the air. I see no reason not to bet the Jags here. Please, Andy and Whale, tell me I'm not crazy.
Yeah, I don't know. Oh,
man, that's a strong case,
said,
man.
They said that's a lot of points. You know, granted, these aren't the Titans. I just feel like the Patriots always find a good way to ruin all the angles like that. The only devil's advocate I could say is just the coaching. I mean, essentially, you're going up against three head coaches on Sunday. I mean, two of
possibly
two,
four. It sounds like Flores might go to Arizona.
Yeah, they great schemes. They know how to exploit your weaknesses. They know how to change. They'll completely change a game. There was a, I can't remember who they played. It was years ago, and it was the number one run defense in the league. So they threw it 60 times. Like just the everything that you yell at coaches about, like on TV, like why aren't you doing this? It makes so much sense in my head. They go out and do it the way it's supposed to. Like, oh, this makes complete sense. Why don't more people just do this? This scheme is perfect. And that's the only thing that scares me. I think the Patriots win, but it is kind of a big number. I would lean the Patriots winning it in a close one. Hopefully low scoring. I also lean the under. I do have a Jacksonville plus 15 under 52, 53, something like that. Teaser that I love because I do think it'll be a low scoring game. Everybody we've talked to kind of agrees like the Patriots should probably run the ball, throw it short, do the things that you can beat Jacksonville with, long drives, keep the ball, and you know, don't try to beat Ramsey in the defensive backfield going deep. Don't play into their hands. So hopefully it's long sustained drives. Maybe a few field goals and touchdowns, because I'm definitely leaning towards it being a low-scoring game.
Yeah, the Patriots offense, as far as adjusted line yards, are getting 5.05 yards per carry, and and the Jags are having a difficult time stopping the run. I've got them ranked 28th in adjusted line yards on defense. So you've got the Patriots number one going up against the Jags number 28th. So I could see the Patriots definitely running the ball, hopefully all day for Patriots backers. But if the Jaguars need to throw it, they can. I mean, the Patriots pass defense, I've got them at 21st least efficient in the league. So, the pass defense is really bad.
Now, when you grade the pass, are you considering their entire season sample, or do you scalp the first four games when they kind of, I don't know, the first four games of the season, I feel like the Patriots defense kind of treated like an extended preseason.
Well,
it looked that way.
I don't regret that in their numbers. I definitely like to keep that in there. I mean, the Patriots have faced the fifth easiest schedule of opposing offenses, and the early on is actually when they were tested by some of those offenses. So to cherry pick those stats, I personally can't do it. If we were to cherry pick some Jaguar stats, if we toss out the 49ers game where they gave up 44 points, I mean, the Jags are only giving up 14.9 points per game on defense, so which would be first in front of the Vikings. So I just don't like cherry picking those stats. I like getting the full sample size. The sample size is already small enough with 16 and now 17 or 18 games for some of these teams that I got to throw everything in there. They are not immune from those terrible defensive performances early on in the year by my numbers.
So you've played right into an angle I was going to try to bring up because I know how much
I was playing right into his hand.
You played right into a situational angle I was going to ask you about, because I know you're a situational handicapper as much as you are a numbers guy depending on the game and the strengths and weaknesses of any given angle, you got to be, right? I mean, you got to be thinking about all the various factors. You can't just use a model blindly, and you just can't use situations,
of course.
Period. You got to use them both. You brought up the Niners game. We saw what the Niners did to this defense, and that was a Jags team that was coming off of two huge wins. They were on the road in a spot that they were expected to, you know, kind of continue their unstoppable defense, and the Niners hung whatever they felt like on that team. And granted, a lot of that was Blake Bortles put the defense in difficult situations, short fields, not a lot of rest on the sidelines. The defense was a little scattered in terms of they had already kind of clinched their playoff spots, and maybe they weren't totally focused. But, you know, if Jimmy G could do this to the Jags D, and we saw what Ben Roethlisberger did to the Jags D last week, what's Tom Brady going to do?
Well, in that specific game, on my situational handicapping sheet here, I actually had the Jaguars as highlighted in red, as in fade. So in that situation, the Jaguars were, the San Francisco was a sandwich game between Houston and Tennessee. The Jags had just clinched the playoff berth by defeating the Texans. So there's a bit of a hangover spot, not to mention I had the Jags as covering three numbers in a row. So it was definitely a letdown spot situationally for the Jags against San Francisco. The Jags were flying cross country. It wasn't a good spot for the Jags there. And even though my numbers told me, oh, hammer the Jags in this spot, I actually had a San Francisco ticket that day because it just wasn't a good spot for them. And then the result ended up being there. You got the Jags gave up 44 points, the most they had given up all year in that spot. So tough situational spot. The Niners were coming on with Jimmy G at that point. So the Niners were playing loose and had nothing to lose and certainly hadn't given up on the season at that point. If anything, the 49ers season had been given, you know, had been rebirthed and given new fire. So I don't hold that loss or that poor defensive showing for the Jags against them too much. Like I said, if you take that one out, the Jags go from third in defensive points allowed to first, from 17.4 down to 14.9.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
if I'm throwing a game out, it's going to be that game. Anytime there's 44 points scored in any game, it's almost always an outlier. So
there's some wonky stuff going on. Yeah. So yeah. Let me poke some more holes in this and see what you think. We saw the Jags play the Titans twice this year.
We did.
And Dick LeBeau crafted a defensive game plan that forced a number of turnovers from Blake Bortles and 15 or 17 points in, 15 points in one game and 17 points in another game. Anyway, So he effectively, Dick LeBeau defense, which is not complex. He likes his zone scheme. He likes zone blitz. He likes to do, it's not unpredictable. And Tom Brady will tell you that it's not unpredictable because he knows exactly how to light that defense up. Is there any reason to think the Jags score over 16 points?
Yeah, the Patriots defense is ranked 31st. Tennessee's defense is ranked 21st. So you got a full third of the field better for Tennessee than for New England. More specifically, Tennessee's 24th against the pass and 7th against the run. So Tennessee's strength on defense would be Jacksonville's strength on offense. So you've got some butting up going there, whereas New England is 30th stopping the run and 21st against the pass. So New England's weakness on defense plays right into Jacksonville's strength on offense. So I can see Jacksonville staying on schedule, staying on script, and not getting too far behind the chains and able to actually consistently move the ball. And once Jacksonville gets into the red zone, they're actually the second most efficient at scoring touchdowns 65% of the time. So Jacksonville, if they can keep those chains moving and keep third downs to a minimum, then they can make some noise in this one. And New England is susceptible on third down. They're allowing third downs to go converted, which puts them 21st in the league. So it's
not, I know, I was just gonna push the points per yard narrative. The points per yard narrative, the Patriots are higher up in that, but Jacksonville is the same. They're both at 13.7 yards per point this year.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. So essentially both tied for fifth there.
Interesting. So, I don't know. In the back of my head, I think about how the Patriots have been able to take away your strength when it matters.
Yes.
Right. And I think about the Jaguars and look at this offense, and it lacks balance. They have some serious deficiencies in terms of weapons in the passing game. We've seen them succeed the last couple weeks despite some pretty rough patches of consecutive snaps of Blake Bortles trying to throw the ball. His receivers have mostly caught the ball, but we've seen some untimely drops. And part of me thinks the Patriots defense just sells out to stop the run here. And says, hey, if you're going to beat us through the air, consistently convert third downs through the air against us on, sure, third and seven, and move down the field. And if we need to show you something exotic on defense, we'll do it in the red zone and force you to kick a field goal. Your points are super valid, and you're actually kind of making me think I need to get on the Jaguars here. But at the same time, this is their second straight road game. This is the biggest game of all of these guys' lives. They're coming off of the biggest win of all of their lives. Sure. Can they
can they bring the level of intensity that they need 2 weeks in a row? Everything broke right for them against the Steelers, and they still only won by 3. And granted, they really won by 10, I guess, because the last touchdown was ridiculous. But it was a one possession.
Not if you had the over.
Not yet. Steelers second half. They sure as shit only won by 3.
Oh yeah, no, Steelers second half.
Yeah, Steelers right. second half.
Yep. No, that was.
There's been a
lot of that where, boy, meaningless. Not that was. I guess it was meaningless.
Yeah, garbage time.
As times expired, but the Titans too with that late touchdown. There's been some nervy times.
I've been burned.
Yeah. Oh man, that was intense. So you know, there's in the back of my head, I just. You know, it's tough for me to really see everything going right for the Jaguars 2 weeks in a row, and for the Patriots to come out with a game plan to stop them that doesn't work. It's possible. I mean, the Patriots coaching staff is obviously lining up jobs for next season. This is not a good Patriots team. We were having this discussion before, but if this Patriots team makes the Super Bowl, I don't think it's really an argument that it's, you know, one of, if not the worst of the Patriots teams to make the Super Bowl. And it's a credit to Belichick and the coaching staff and Brady and his, sure. you know, magical, you know, inability to age, I guess, that they can, you know, that they can still be a dynamic, a dynamic team with this roster. I would
contend it's probably the best team they've ever fielded. If you want to go straight by the metrics of like NFL rules infringements and fines, they have completely stayed out of the spotlight on that.
That's a great point.
There's been very little that you haven't been able to take anything and throw the word gate at the end of it this year with the Patriots. So, I mean, just, you know, no news is good news. I mean, the closest they came to anything was maybe signing James Harrison, but, I mean, he got cut by the other team. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Breaking Tom Brady's hand in practice, too, huh?
Yeah, but that's the conspiracy theory right now. The long con by Tomlin.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, you know, this Patriots team is really tough to peg, and, you know, Brady is as unstoppable a force in the National Football League as we've ever seen. Sure. You know, the fact that he's as old as he is, you know, and he's still got his physical tools is amazing, because he's obviously got, you know, he had the mental side of the game all along, and it's gotten stronger and stronger to go along with the fact that his body is not betraying him, like what happened to Peyton Manning or any other, you know, any of the other particularly old quarterbacks who really needed a really good running game to, you know, complement, and a really good defense to complement their late career success. But instead of, you know, we're putting that on its head, and, you know, Brady is here. He's going to win the MVP this year. Like, it's just incredible what's going on. And I guess from the Patriots fans' standpoint, like, I am in awe of how spectacular Deion Lewis has been in this last quarter of the season in the playoffs. He was dynamic in the passing game for the Patriots, and the short passing attack against the Titans was not something they were prepared for, and Deion Lewis just absolutely shredded them. I think he had 9 receptions, and his all-purpose yards, he was like 150, something like that, all-purpose yards. So it's pretty impressive that you know, that they've got this offense that's able to attack you in all of these ways. And Rob Gronkowski, whenever they've needed to unleash Gronkowski, he's been the difference in the game, as we saw in the regular season game against the Steelers. And, you know, it's going to be fascinating to see how they match up against this Jags defense, because, as you pointed out, it's not just numbers. Like, this Jags defense is freaking good. They have dynamic playmakers at every level. And, you know, this is going to be a real test for the Patriots, and we're going to see how good they really are. They've beaten a lot of teams that suck. So,
to touch on some Gronk, if you want to cherry pick some of the weaknesses of the Jags defense, the Jags are actually 20th in DVOA against tight ends.
Yeah.
So if once the Gronk yardage props come out, I might take a look at an over. I mean, you're not getting any line value, certainly, betting a Gronk receiving yards over. But if there is a weakness to the Jags defense outside of the run game, which good luck picking which Patriots running back is going to go off on any given day. Gronk could potentially have a little bit of value on the over.
I like that call too. And it's interesting, the Jags play man-to-man defense as opposed to zone. Tom Brady's most spectacular days in the passing game are against zone defenses. So potentially Brady under yardage is probably a decent look. Sure. I like the full game under here more than any other play. And I know I'm not alone on that. I know a lot of our good friends in this industry have already all identified that as the right side in this one. You got some under action, Woody. I think, Andy, you had an under tease, you said. My biggest play in this game is probably going to be under 46. This is the kind of game, and I think you highlighted a lot of key points. I think we're going to see a lot of rushing attempts on both sides of the ball. The Patriots are going to, they're going to concede yardage, but I don't think they're going to concede points. We've seen that as their MO, it's both kickers are capable of kicking field goals. This is going to be a field position battle kind of a game with the difference being made in the field goals, which lends itself to backing the Jags. Whether I actually get to the point where I take those points or not is a different question, because it's awfully tough thinking about Blake Bortles against Tom Brady and a Bill Belichick coach team in Foxborough, their second week in a row on the road. Couple other quick notes for you.
Yeah, it's tough to play another game on the road, another tough place to play, another cold weather city. Like, it's not going to be an easy game for them to. There's no experience. You know, you can make a case for a lot of the teams left in the playoffs as far as that, if you want to just give the Patriots a trophy now. But yeah, second straight road game, second straight cold city. Third game they've had to play now, and you know, basically all the experience they have in the playoffs is gathered up in the the last two games they played just now. So you should give Brady the edge, but yeah, the number just seems big, the total seems high, and I think we're kind of all agreeing that we're gonna get in the way of the Brady and Belichick train.
One thing that makes me feel a little bit more comfortable is the Patriots are on a 10-1 ATS streak by what I've tracked. So they're winning the last four in a row. So you're definitely getting line value by betting the Jags, if nothing else.
Yeah. No, I agree the value's there. The question is just, Is the moment too big for the Jaguars? Does the Jaguars offense completely shrivel? And do they, and this is actually an interesting jumping off point. We could have been having this exact same conversation before the 2015 AFC Championship game with the Colts and Andrew Luck coming into to Foxborough. Granted, there was not a lot of this. There would have been a conversation about, can the offense keep up? Because the Patriots' defense at that time was not particularly impressive, and the Colts were doing some spectacular stuff on offense, and Andrew Luck is this up-and-coming star, and they had played the Colts and played them relatively tough in the regular season, and blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, the case was there to be made that the Colts were, you know, were a team to not look past, and the Patriots beat them 45-7. And
sure,
there's enough...
That game stayed under.
Yeah, that game did stay under. It's insane that it did, but that game did stay under. I think I had a Patriots under tease that day, and I laughed still about the under part of the. I'm sorry, the Patriots over tease or something like that, and the over made it on some kind of garbage touchdown Pat scored at the end of the game, I think. A team that's this young, that's. You know, that's at the pinnacle of success here. This isn't like,
I don't hold this Jags team up in as much esteem as I do like the Ravens, right? Like the Ravens came to Foxborough twice. They should have beat the Patriots both times. They didn't beat them the first time because they missed that field goal. But that team was loaded with vets on defense. They had been to the playoffs a shit ton of times. I mean, practically the same team had beaten them in Foxborough a couple years earlier. It wasn't in the AFC title game. It was in, like, the divisional round or maybe even the wild card round. But, you know, I mean, that Ravens team had the experience. They had the horses. And, you know, they stuck it to the Patriots in those two AFC title games, you know, on the road. And it was impressive as hell. And, you know, to a degree, I would categorize the Jags more like the Colts team in terms of experience, in terms of kind of, you know, mental intangibles and things of that nature. So I worry about this Jags team just completely having a letdown and being happy to be there in the second half if they're down like 28-7 or 28-3 at halftime or something like that. And then we see no hope of a backdoor cover a la the Titans last week.
Back to the NBA. Did you say you had the Charlotte over?
Yeah, I did. Did it already hit?
Well, they're at like 140 at half.
That's great.
138.
That is awesome.
Yeah. When you bet an over and a team sets a franchise record for first half points. 77 points at half.
I actually took it on the Hornets tonight. Money line. Yeah. So
I'm good 18. Work, man.
At 77-61.
Good work. I got the Pelicans. Right, I have the Pelicans too. They're thumping the Hawks. That looks good. I got the over and the Spurs Nets.
It's on too.
decent pace. Oh man. The Bulls are beating the Warriors right now. 2-0. All right. Last couple kind of random thoughts and notes. I think this was a really good discussion, and I hope it helps some of these folks listening make some decisions in this game this week. In support of the under, and this is the seventh playoff game in Foxborough. I'm sorry, the seventh AFC title game in Foxborough. The previous six, five of them went under. All of them kind of relatively comparable lines. There was only one that was particularly low, 43.5, that also went under. The only one to go over was last year's Steelers-Pats game, and that was thanks to some weird third and fourth quarter scoring because the Steelers defense really had nothing to stop Brady in that matchup. So the under, you know, this is, you know, we're a little kind of jaded on. I think we're a little jaded on the Patriots, and we're going to get into this in a second too about the next two teams. We're a little, you know, you're always in going into the championship game when one team is coming off of having just played off a bye. There's always a little bit of over perception of how good that team is. I mean, they had a freaking week to rest. They had a week to kind of figure out how they wanted to get their team healthy and to put together kind of how they were going to, you know, squad their roster for the game, and they're rested, and they were playing a team that had just had a knockdown dragout fight the week before, and so it, you know, there's always the perception that the team was a little better than they actually are, in that when they win the divisional game off a bye, I feel like, and so that lends itself a little bit to backing the Jags as well, and last but not, you know, the Patriots in the AFC title games.
And yet also, it was the Titans.
Yeah. It was the Titans, right?
It was the Titans.
Yeah. Yeah, the Titans defense had
nothing. Lowest rated team in the playoffs outside of maybe the Bills. Kind of close in my ratings, but.
Yeah, man.
No, I don't think too many people thought the Titans as 14-point underdogs were going to go into Foxborough and upset the Patriots. So.
I haven't given this question much thought because I'm covered on both ends here. I have the Jags to win the AFC at 8-1, and I have a massive outstanding last parlay leg with Bama to win the CFB title, Patriots to win the AFC title, and so I'm pretty evenly balanced here. But if we have, I guess I'll ask Andy, if we have some listeners who are holding, like we are holding, AFC title futures,
Are you hedging at all? Do we live in a world where Blake Bortles beats Tom Brady in the AFC Championship game on the road?
Boy, I mean, maybe just hedge a little. Stranger things have happened. You can get like +350 on Jacksonville. I feel like maybe cover your liability just in case, so you don't feel so terrible about it. But I don't know. It feels like you're looking. If you look at it just from 10,000 feet up, it just doesn't feel like they can go into Foxborough and win the game outright. I just don't. I don't think they can. They can overcome the Patriots' coaching experience, home field advantage, Gronk, whatever running back decides to be really good that day. They don't even really have great receivers. And honestly, their offense or their defense. I saw a stat today. I don't know where I found it. Somewhere on Twitter, but they haven't. Besides the Steelers game, they haven't given up 400 yards of total offense since like the first 5-6 weeks there. They really did. They aren't a great defense, but they're good enough. Like they've just gotten good enough. You know what I'm saying? Like
yes,
they're not. They don't have the tools. They don't have the players. They don't have the talent to be a great offense. But they're getting to the point where they did get to the point where it's like, well, this is as good as we're going to be able to get with the current roster that we have, and we're going to make the best of it and play to their strengths. And here we are. We win the East easily. We're the one seed easily. We move on after the bye easily again. Maybe it's not the teams of old, but they still seem like the class of the AFC right now.
Yeah.
And, the Jags played a much more competitive game last week where they actually had to try most of the game. The Patriots kind of got the coast there at the end, and maybe that'll start to play into it a little as far as some fatigue on that defense chasing around Antonio and what's his face?
Martavius and Bell
and everybody all day.
Yeah. Woody, you said you had the Jags power rated ahead of the Pats in this one. Would you hedge a Pats future?
I would. I mean, it's at what, +350, somewhere in that range, depending on the price you have on the Patriots. If you got anything in the plus money, I think it's worth a third of a unit to at least cover your liability on it. If you're laying juice with the Patriots, I'd probably just let it ride.
Can I talk you into opening up a middle and backing like Jags +3.5 at like +200? If you do it that way, you're not getting quite as good a payday, obviously, so you'd have to lay a little bit more to cover your outlay, but you are setting up a middle where if the Pats win with the field goal, you're hitting both.
I don't know if I would do something like that. I like the perspective you're coming from and the outside of the box idea. I mean, realistically, they're still 9-point favorites, right? They're still expected to win the game, despite all the love that I heap upon Jacksonville. So if I'm sitting with plus money on the Patriots, I'll probably hedge a tiny bit, but I don't think I'll get too crazy with it. I would just take the Jags money line. I mean, maybe +3. Yeah, that's not terrible. Not terrible. You talked me into it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I set you up in this because I had somebody ask me this question, and I thought long and hard about it, and I was eventually like, you know what? I think if you can go even +3.5, you can almost get +200 odds right now on the alt lines at five dimes, and then you can put half of your stake that you have on the Pats on Jags to lose by less than 3.5, and who knows, Pats win with a field goal as time expires, which we've seen them do 1 million times in the playoffs and game. Yeah. It's an angle worth considering out there if you're holding a Pats future that you feel uncomfortable losing.
If I can if I can be totally honest, I do have the Patriots money line in a parlay. So I'm not completely throwing out the possibility that the Patriots are capable of winning this game. I still wholeheartedly believe that. I just think 9 points is absurd.
Yeah. Okay, I dig that. Okay, let's talk about the night game here. I'm going to give Andy the floor first here, since this is his team.
Oh, shit, the Vikes game, isn't it?
Yeah. Did you know the Vikings are in the NFC title game, man? I'm sure.
I thought they lost.
And you know,
they should have. Maybe they shouldn't have. Maybe they should have played in the second half. That was very disheartening. Yeah, very disheartening. And then Andy didn't sleep all night.
I guess Woody, from someone with an outside perspective, who's had more heartache over the years in NFC title games between the Vikings and the Eagles?
Oh,
Eagles! Eagles lost what, three in a row before finally winning one.
The Eagles have been to the Super Bowl. So
yeah,
in our lifetime,
point.
They have been. Yeah.
In our lifetime, and I will say I did enjoy the. We'll call it a less than sober podcast, emergency podcast you guys did Sunday night.
Emergency podcasts are in, man.
We needed instant reactions.
Oh, you know it, and you know if it's the Pats Vikings Super Bowl, there'll be an emergency podcast on Sunday for sure.
Waiting until the game?
Oh, we'll wait until the game's done. Although that would be funny if we just got Andy to jinx the if the Vikings were way up at halftime and we just got Andy to jinx the shit out of
like last week?
yeah, exactly. That'll be fun. But yeah, no, I think, you know, Andy, you were secretly or not so secretly pretty nervous heading to last week, right? I'm not understating that. Stress was high. Right.
Yeah, anytime, and I mean, it's just like what we talked about with the Patriots. Anytime you have a great, great quarterback, great coach, experienced team, and you know, with some offensive weapons, anything. It's a one game series, and Drew Brees really stepped it up in the second half. And I was worried about that all game. There was, you have a missed call on a pass interference. You got a blocked punt. All of a sudden. Shit goes pear shaped and it all goes sideways and everybody who's laughing and having a good time is all of a sudden super freaking somber. And I mean, I knew we had that play. I've seen that play run in practice. That's something you just keep in your back pocket. The old have the guy fall down play. We're super lucky it didn't come down to a field goal because I didn't have a whole lot of faith in the kicker there. But you know, you take it either way. Moving on.
Guess what though? This week the bookmakers think it's going to come down to making a field goal. Vikings are 3-point favorites on the road. They are expecting something like 50,000 dog masks in Philly. They've really embraced this moment here. They've got the energy. They've got the crowd. They've got the city. Kind of all pulling for this underdog team. Nobody believes in them. We didn't believe in them to start the playoffs. In all fairness, I have a massive lack of coverage in the futures market. If Philly actually manages to win here, I'm going to be pretty, pretty sad. I think I'm holding Vikings 19.5 to 1 from about October. So that will be – if they make the Super Bowl, I'm going to be pretty stoked. And, you know, Philly, Nick Foles was underwhelming last week. I thought they won with defense and the fact that Steve Sarkisian bungled the end-of-game situation at the goal line with
those
his play calling.
Just the shovel pass. Like, if you're an Atlanta fan, you just have to be having waking up sweating, imagining that shovel pass. That's not a play you run.
Dude, and I think...
And then two fades down there. I hate fades down there.
Yeah, I think personally, just the media narrative and the news cycle here is looking past how lucky the Eagles got.
They got that end of the first half field goal to keep it 10-9 instead of 10-6 heading into halftime. They got, you know, they had that one pass Nick Foles threw that absolutely should have been picked that bounced off the guy's knee. That was like their biggest offensive play of the game. You know, they should have conceded a touchdown at the end of the game there. Atlanta was in perfect position to win that thing by two and call it, call it a squeaker and head out to Minnesota for the title game. You know, they made a couple plays. Things broke in their favor in a couple ways. That's what happens when you have a bye and a week to prepare and you're at home and, you know, you're playing a team, an indoor team outdoors. And, you know, it all kind of worked out for them. And you know, it's tough for me to, you know, to think that the Eagles can do it again. Really, I want to be all in on the Vikings here. I think they're the better team in pretty much every phase of the game. And the fact that they're only 3-point favorites, even though on the road, is, you know, is something that I'm almost certainly going to be backing the Vikings here. Woody, is there an angle for the underdog in this one? Are you feeling the dog here?
So I'm a bit conflicted on this one. I too have some season futures coming down to this game. I've got the Vikings at 825 or 8-1 plus 800, somewhere in that range to win the Super Bowl. But I've also got the Eagles at plus 800 to win the NFC. Mm. So I'm pretty happy no matter who wins this game. The one big mismatch I do see in favor of the Eagles is their defensive line against the Vikings offensive line. I've got the Eagles at for defensive adjusted line yards, allowing only 2.99 yards per rush, which is first in the league, going up against the Vikings offensive line for adjusted line yards at 3.96, which puts them at 19th, respectively. So if the Eagles are going to win this game, they are going to win it ugly. They're going to win it in the trenches.
It would have to be similar to last week.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Nick Foles isn't Matty Ice, right? And I can't see it. I'm all in on the Vikings, honestly. I think they win this one. Whether they cover the three or not, it's hard to say. The Eagles' red zone defense is 20th. So they're sort of the opposite of bend, don't break. Like they don't bend, but then all of a sudden they break in the red zone. So outside of what we saw last week. So I think the Vikings take care of business, but the Eagles, if they make it ugly in the trenches, can absolutely pull off an upset.
Yeah, and it is like you talked with the as far as like the Jaguars game where you were saying strength versus strength, like very good defensive line, good pass rush, but then you do have Keenum. I'm sure you've seen plenty of stats about that this week as far as just, you know, quarterback rating, completion percentage, every stat you want to throw about quarterbacks as far as when he's under pressure, he's been great. He does seem to have a pretty good feel for the pocket. So hopefully, you know, if you're backing Minnesota here, Keenum is sliding around like he is and finding receivers open down the field, making Aaron Rodgers-ing it. That's not a word at all. rolling out, stepping up, sliding off of pressure, and finding Thielen and Diggs, because it's a pain in the ass to cover those guys for a long time. Even Jarius Wright made some Jarius Wright first down last week where nobody decided to cover him. It was a bit of a pick play, but everybody does that, so that's just how it goes. What is the receiver that doesn't get any love?
Treadwell.
He didn't get a catch. Or he might have got a catch, but
he got a nice penalty. He drew a nice penalty,
and everybody in Minnesota, we all just laughed at that as far as, well, he did something. Right. We were super pumped about that penalty. Like, well, he contributed.
Good work, Laquan. Way to, yeah. Good first round pick there.
It does look like there's a little room for the passing offenses to have a little bit of success in this game. We've got offensive lines that can block pretty well for the pass. So if we are going to see the ball moving down the field, it's certainly not going to be on the ground. It'll more likely be through the air. So if you had to twist my arm to give you something on this one, I would lean to the over.
That's a good segue. I like the over a lot in this game. I was expecting them to open it in the 40 to 42 range, and we saw 37.5, which I think completely underestimates how Minnesota is going to be able to find success through the air, picking on these corners. Cornerbacks for Philadelphia, I don't think, are particularly strong. Why Atlanta didn't, try to make anything out of that mismatch, I don't know. But I think if they can keep the Philly D line, which is their strength, somewhat neutralized, especially in the second half, I think you're going to be able to see the Vikings score in, into the 20s, 27 point range. We knew that the Saints were a little bit limited on defense with some of the injuries they faced last week. They were a little banged up, but it was still a pretty good defense. They still had some playmakers. They were able to neutralize Cam Jordan fairly well, I thought. They were able to scheme. Pat Shurmur's got a really nice – I really like Pat Shurmur as a coach. I'll be sad if he leaves Minnesota because I think he's a great fit there. But he deserves another – it's looking like he's going to be bouncing. I think it'll be a good hire for whoever hires Pat Shurmur.
Oh, for sure.
If it's the Giants, that's a bummer because I don't like that organization, but that's beside the point. I think his scheme is pretty strong. They were able to scheme their guys open against a pretty good tandem of cornerbacks against New Orleans. So the idea that they'll be able to do that in Philadelphia, I have faith in them being able to do that. If I had to throw cold water on that, it would be that was indoors. The wide receiving core for the Vikings generally plays a little better at home indoors on that turf. And if it's at all slippery or if they're at all having any issues with the field in Philly, maybe you see that becomes the kind of the neutralizing factor for the wide receiving core mismatch against the cornerbacks for Philly. And in that instance, I think you probably got a game. If it's a little slippery, if it's a little wet, if it's a little bit difficult for Minnesota to find their rhythm on offense, then this is going to be this is a well lined game. I think we really are talking about it's a 20-17 kind of a final score probably. Best of luck picking the right winner there. Might as well take the dog in the points, I guess.
Might get hasty.
But I agree. I'm hopeful that it's, that we see some relatively competent football out of the Vikings offensively here. And I made a big deal about this is the first moment. This is the moment too big for Blake Bortles and the Jaguars in general. This is their first AFC title game. Blah blah blah. A little bit of that is of concern for me for the Vikings. You're going to have a looser Eagles team. They know they have nothing to lose, right? People didn't expect them to be here. People didn't expect them to beat the Falcons, and they're going to be a little bit looser. And I doubt you're going to see, a particularly tight game from anyone on this team. The question is, do you see any, is Nick Foles is who we think he is. Like, if he gives us his best ever, his best, if we see the best ever Nick Foles play, do the Eagles win? And I don't know. I think the over is a no-doubter if we see the best ever Nick Foles show up. Right? If he was a little nervous last week and a little tight and a little, had a little bit of difficulty, complementing what looked like a relatively strong rushing attack, although the yardage didn't really bear it out. It looked like they could have done a lot more on the ground, personally, I thought.
But you know, if we see a competent Foles go along with a competent rushing attack, maybe, you know, the over really is like, you know, Jag Steelers, where it's halftime and we're laughing like, can you believe they hung a 37 or a 38 or whatever number you get.
Yeah, it'll be like this. Yeah, the Steelers there were, boy, we cashed this over.
Yeah,
and not so much for halftime show.
Yeah, this should be fun.
So to keep an eye on Sendejo's status.
Yeah, we were talking earlier. He's practicing. He's cleared some of the concussion protocols. They're saying it's looking good, but you know how that goes.
Yeah.
NFL teams lie all the time. That's huge. Harris is a nice safety, but he is not Andrew Sendejo. That is a huge detriment to everybody else in the defensive backfield. He's great coming over the top, and he's great in the run game. Really would benefit Minnesota if his brain bruise heals nice and fast. You know, I am a big keep him safe, and you know, we talked about Tom Savage, like almost dying on the field and having a seizure and having to go play the next down. But like, you know, concussions are weird. We talked about this earlier. Like, sometimes a guy just doesn't respond the same way as another guy. Like, some of these people, a hit doesn't look that bad and they're out for 3 weeks, and then another guy, you know, he takes a hit, it looks terrible, and he's back in the game like the next quarter. Like, he cleared everything. So concussions are goofy.
Yep. Yeah. It's a good thing to look out for, because it would.
It looks, and then the only really other huge injury, I think, and he kind of answered that question in the second half, but I think Fournette seems fine. That ankle was more of a scare than anything.
Does Everson Griffin, you know Vikings defense well, is he going to line up against the backup left tackle for Philly? He going to be able to be the difference maker for this unit?
You would think so. I mean, I haven't read anything yet, but he could raise hell. Like, he will definitely have to. Like, we talked about this a little with the recap of the Saints game. They had it right. Just quick stuff, quick short stuff. Don't let Breeze end up getting the jersey dirty. If you can keep him from getting hit, things are going to go a lot better. So if Foles isn't finding people right away, he might even be in for a long day if Griffin's getting there a lot.
Yeah, he doesn't really have the crispness in the short passing game, I don't think, to scare me. But, you know, then again, here I am talking up the over, so who knows. Okay, all right. Well,
opinion on the side of someone?
I'm going to go Vikings at the end of the day here, even though I have a liability with them on the futures market. I don't think I'm going to cover that. I just, you know, and I fall into this trap from time to time, so apologies if you're tailing me on this and it doesn't come through. I don't want to see the fucking Philadelphia Eagles in the Super Bowl. I don't want to see Nick Foles in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, maybe two months ago, if I take a step back and I'm not a huge Vikings fan, Carson Wentz is an exciting player. That was an exciting team. He was doing amazing things. Let's just go look at the Philadelphia game. Every game's a Philadelphia game, isn't it? I guess Seattle game. A couple of those throws he made were, you just, what is he doing? Why is he throwing that ball? And it was an amazing play. He's magical. He's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and great pocket.
Nick Foles is not he's not that guy.
Yeah, he's not. It's tough,
well, who,
man.
Who do you want to be in the Super Bowl?
I want Pats Vikings. The deep dive Pats Super Bowl. Vikings. You know, we decided to do this podcast on a whim in the middle of the summer. And lo and behold, if we could have the first year of the pod be our two teams year. Of allegiance, then that would be pretty sweet. And I think it'll make some great content.
Yeah, I suppose.
Make for great content.
Yeah, Vikings, and then maybe some sort of situation where Brady and Gronkowski, or, you know, maybe break their arms or something, and then the Patriots advance. I want to see anyone get injured.
The look-ahead line. I have the Patriots favored by what, 3 in that game, and
yeah, 3
would be a Patriots Vikings Super Bowl, that would be. But I mean, I think the Vikings would be the side in that. I've got them as 4.8-point favorites over the Patriots, so line value on a Vikings
Super Bowl. I completely
agree.
You got to get some home field advantage in there too, right?
It's such a it's an interesting conversation in and of itself. What do they line this thing if it's Vikings Pats? Because you know you're going to get Patriots money. You know you probably have a shitload of Patriots liability.
Absolutely.
You probably got to lay this. I laughed when I saw like the look ahead lines that were saying the Vikings would be favored or it would be a pick 'em. Like, give me a break. Like, they're going to lay this thing they're going to put as high a premium as they can on you backing the Patriots in this game.
Yeah, because, I mean, maybe that's where it should be according to the power numbers.
Sure, yeah, but they're, like, never gonna, they're not going to
New England.
Yeah, there's no way they're opening up a number that's going to put them in a situation where they have 80% liability in the biggest handle of the year, you know, on one side. So they're gonna make people pay, just like they did with the Steelers against the Jags. They're going to make people pay a premium to line up and back the favorite if they want it. And so I would be surprised if we don't see it open 3.5, even if the Vikings look great and the Patriots win but don't cover. I would expect to see Pats minus 3.5 when it finally opens. So I think... I don't know, but maybe I'm crazy. And I'll probably be back in the Vikings in the Super Bowl. And if that makes 3 weeks in a row, I fade the Patriots in the playoffs and they cover all 3 weeks, that will really go down in my annals of my gambling history. The team I
super
like.
Super
fan. Faded them 3 weeks in a row, lost all 3 weeks. So I'm looking forward to that. That'll be fun. That'll be a fun podcast if I back the Vikings and Andy's team loses and we have to record a post Super Bowl podcast. That'll be quite the day. So
I think you got to get some. You got to just turn the recording on at halftime and like battle it out.
Yeah, you have like there's an hour. There's an hour and a half halftime. So
yeah, right.
You got that.
And you know who? And you know what team generally is prepared for that? The team that's been there before 7 times, the New England Patriots. So. We'll see how it goes. Anyway.
Should I be cheering for the Jags? As a fan? Wait, what? They have released that too. That over-under look ahead, what was that, 36, 37?
35, 36. Probably the lowest in Super Bowl history, right? Yeah. Or at least in modern Super Bowl history.
Yeah.
Especially after last year, Falcons-Patriots was like 53 or 54, and even that made it over. That's incredible. Yeah. How about crazy would that be? What a dichotomy. Last year was just – the whole playoffs last year was just offense, offense, offense. Favorites, favorites, favorites. And we've seen a dogs cover like crazy this year and unders hitting at a heavy clip as well. It's pretty incredible. All right. Thank you, guys. This was a fantastic podcast. I hope people enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed recording it. And best of luck this weekend in your plays. And we will be back after championship game weekend, hopefully with happy attitudes as the Patriots and the Vikings head to Super Bowl 52 in Minnesota. And, you know, what are you going to do this weekend, actually? What do you got any social plans?
No, I'm actually going to have a pretty quiet weekend this weekend. I've been down in the Bay Area the past couple weekends, so I'm going to be happy just to be home for a little bit, dog sitting for a buddy of mine. So it'll just be me in front of the TV watching these two games on Sunday for a much needed relaxing weekend here in town.
Oh, that's cool. How about you, Andy? What are you going to do?
Well, I'm going to the exact same bar and wearing the exact same thing and bringing my exact same lucky quarter and drinking the exact same Miller High Lifes. Yeah, I can't change anything. What are you, crazy?
All right, well, best of luck. Yeah, best of luck, guys. Have a wonderful weekend, and thank you again for the amazing podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for popping on again, Woody.
I really appreciate being here.
Yeah, and follow at Woody Wins.
Yeah, please follow me at Woodstock Wins on Twitter. And if you're in California, there's only one thing you can do that would make me happy, and that's hey, smoke weed every day.
Oh, that made me laugh, obviously.
Dude.
One of the Kendrick Lamar saying, Kendrick Lamar says it, said it best. California, we got the women, weed, and weather, and that's all, you know, that's all you need.
One more. He doesn't even mention the skiing.
The skiing is outstanding too.
I gotta trip to Tahoe if we ever get some snow. Andy, you want to send us some from Minnesota?
Yeah, we got more coming here.
We gotta go out to Mammoth. Is the spot. All right, let's wrap this up. Good job, guys. That was a great podcast. Good luck, everybody. Have fun.
I appreciate it.